Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Hey, this is Hack the Entrepreneur. Thank you so much for joining me today. I'm happy to have you here. I hope that your 2020 is off to a wonderful start, a great start, and that things have just been kind of going your way. Well, we got a great show for you today, and I'm really, really excited to bring you today's guest. So without further ado, let's just get into it. My guest had just graduated from college when he found himself in an interesting position. His dad had just opened two trampoline parks, but at the same time, he had to step back from the business. This was 2006, and my guest decided at 21 years old to take the reins and become CEO of SkyZone, which is a trampoline park company, which you have probably seen around your city. So he took charge, and without any real plan of action, kept refining the parks and opening more and more locations. Yet somewhere along the line, he decided that the real path to growth was in franchising parks to people around the world. And this is exactly what he did. From those first two locations, they've grown to over 200 locations around the world. Now, let's hack Jeff Platt. Time and place is everything, especially in your marketing. But today's age of a million messages per minute and not enough hours in a day, how do you possibly catch people's attention? Fortunately, there is a simple way. LinkedIn can help you speak to the right professionals at the right time. With over 62 million decision makers on LinkedIn, you're able to connect with the right business leaders who are relevant to your company. And with LinkedIn ads, you can make sure your messages are getting through to those people. Even small and medium-sized businesses are making the most out of LinkedIn ads because they're using LinkedIn to get their voices heard and their messages to resonate with the audience. And to be clear, these ads are not just about awareness. LinkedIn ads are driving traffic and driving engagement. Whether you need visits to a landing page or registrations to your next event, LinkedIn ads can do it. Because with precise targeting, you can speak to the people that matter. Try it for yourself. LinkedIn is offering you a free $100 LinkedIn ad credit to launch your first campaign. Simply visit linkedin.com/hack. That's linkedin.com/hack. Some terms and conditions apply, but go there now to get your free $100 ad credit. Now, just before we get into today's conversation, I want you to just think back. Try and remember when you started your small business. It was no small feat. It took a lot of late nights, early mornings, and that probably occasional all-nighter. And the bottom line is you've just been insanely busy ever since. So why not make things a little easier on yourself? Well, our friends at FreshBooks have the solution. FreshBooks invoicing and accounting software is designed specifically for small business owners. It's simple, it's intuitive, and it keeps you way more organized than that dusty old shoebox filled with receipts. Create and send professional-looking invoices in just 30 seconds. And get paid faster with online automated payments. File expenses even quicker and keep them perfectly organized for tax time. And the best part? FreshBooks grows alongside your business, so you'll always have the tools you need when you need them, without ever having to learn the ins and outs of accounting. Join 24 million people who've used FreshBooks. Try it for free for 30 days. There's no catch and there's no credit card required. Go to freshbooks.com/hack and enter Hack the Entrepreneur in the How Did You Hear About Us section to get started. Once again, that's freshbooks.com/hack. We are back with another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. And today we have a very special guest. Jeff, welcome to the show.
Thanks, John. Appreciate having me.
Absolutely. My pleasure. This is going to be fun. So I've been looking forward to this, being a fan of your business myself and my family. So I think we should probably just jump straight into this.
Let's do it.
All right. Let's start here, Jeff. As let's say president slash CEO slash entrepreneur, can you tell me, what is the one thing you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
I think probably listening would be something that's led to some success of our business. And I think as a CEO, sometimes people are afraid to approach the CEO of a company. And I try and make myself as approachable as possible and make the team feel like I'm just another member of the team. There's nothing different or special about me because I've got a title. And I think by creating a culture that people feel comfortable walking up to you and sharing ideas or throwing out crazy ideas, and you're able to just listen and take it in, it leads to innovation and new ideas happening and trying things and sometimes failing and sometimes really good and successful things, both from our team and also from the guests that come to our park. So not only do I try and make myself approachable to the team, but I'm somewhat active on social media and people reach out to me a lot on Twitter and guests share good comments and they share bad comments. And I think that if you can create a culture where people want to approach you with ideas, again, good and bad, and you're willing to listen and act on those or empower them to act on those, I think that really helps. And I've tried to make a habit of that and create a culture here that enables that.
I like that. Do you, or have you noticed, like, or have you struggled with maybe having that sort of that openness and that willingness to listen and that people can approach you with questions, but still being sort of like the captain of the ship?
I wouldn't say struggle, but if anything, it's, and I actually view this as a good thing. It's sometimes people are surprised that maybe I'm the president or I'm the CEO or one of the founders, because I look like everyone else. I wear jeans, I wear a t-shirt, I sit in an open office, I don't sit behind closed doors. And it's important to me that everyone feels like I'm just one of them. And I'm very transparent about what's happening at the business and things going on, whether it's personally or professionally. And I just think that leads to an environment where people feel like I can be myself at work because he's being his self at work, and it's open and people are willing to share and listen. And so it's worked well. And I don't think that you got to lead by being something you're not. Just be who you are. And I think everyone else will follow suit. I think that's a good thing. Someone on our team once said to me, and this was, to me, felt like, okay, I was doing something right, when they said, I feel like my work self and my home self are the exact same person. And that was, that to me was a really simple but powerful statement about the culture we have.
So the history of SkyZone is your father, Rick Platt, he founded it 2004 as what it is now. And then you joined after being done with school and became the CEO at 21 years old?
Yeah. So I got involved. I was always sort of involved in the early days and helping him on the creative side. And then when I graduated college, I full-time dedicated every moment of my life to the business. And at the time we were just opening our second location. And I wouldn't say it was a company that really was deserving of a CEO title per se, but he handed over the reins to me as he was stepping back and dealing with some personal issues at the time with my mother, who had some health problems, and kind of took over from there.
So CEO at, and you have two, I guess, parks running at the time. Did you have this, or, I mean, so it's one thing to look back and have that confidence sort of as a CEO now and be like, I'm still the same as everyone. And, but you're like, what, 14 years on at this point. At the beginning, did you, when you left college, you probably didn't take, or did you take business in school?
I did. I was in the business school.
Okay, cool. So I was going to say you probably didn't take CEOing. I didn't mean you probably took business. But I was like, maybe he actually took business. So let me see this. Before you went to college, was your father like in business himself already? So you knew that this would be somewhere you would go?
Honestly, I went to college. I was sort of always a kid that I wasn't thinking too far ahead. I wasn't someone that stressed about where I went to college. I applied to one school and I was fortunate to get in. So I went. And when I was in school, I was being a student. I wasn't really thinking about what life after college was. As I look back, my dad was always in business for himself growing up. So I guess in a way it was sort of ingrained in me to be in business for myself. But I really didn't go to college thinking, I'm going to do this. This is my future. Just sort of happened.
And then from 2006, when you sort of take control, at what point did you realize that you wanted to start franchising the business?
It was around end of 2006, early 2007, that the idea first popped into our head. And the reason was we happened to be on a Spike TV. I don't even know if Spike TV is still around, but we happened to be on Spike TV because they were doing a profile on an Ultimate Fighter, a UFC heavyweight champion who had an upcoming fight. And they were doing one of their pre-fight promos on him. And part of his training regimen happened to be at Sky Zone. And so they showed him literally jumping around, training, doing workouts on our courts. And it aired globally, actually. And it really wasn't a segment about Sky Zone. It was more about him, but this is part of a workout that he did. And as a result of that, we got about 150 to 200 emails from people saying, I'd love to open one of these in my country or in my city. I got to have one. This looks like so much fun. How can I get it? Do you franchise? And that was the first time that we said, wow, there's some demand for this business outside of just the neighborhoods that we were operating in at the time. But we didn't yet pursue that path. I kind of stored those emails away. We were very busy just figuring out how to operate the two parks we had. But that always stuck with us. And when we opened our third location, we felt like, okay, this was the third park we had done. We kind of had some operating procedures down. Now seemed like a good time to talk about what scale could look like, and franchising is a great way to scale. And so went back to those 200 emails we received and started reaching back out to people and said, hey, good news. We're thinking about franchising. And that's really where we started.
So when you were flooded with emails, you sort of pulled back and held back because you wanted to sort out your processes?
Yeah. Yeah. It was important for us to feel like, okay, we knew how to design these parks. We knew how to lay them out. We knew how to operate them. We had some systems that we felt were in place. And I'm talking about basic things, but we felt after we opened our third location that, okay, we could repeat this now. The second one, we didn't feel was quite repeatable yet. We didn't have things quite documented the way that you should if you want to continue to open more units.
How should
after
you?
Three, we felt.
How okay. should you?
Well, we felt right. I mean, it's really, and looking back,
everyone's
on it,
listening, three, Jeff, and being like, how?
After three, we thought we knew what we were doing. The reality is, we still had no clue what we were doing. We felt a little bit more comfortable.
Okay, so, but like, what are these? Like, not looking back now and knowing what it should have been, but at that point, what did you think that the process is like? Like, were these three locations all in the same city, or were you already moving to different markets?
No, we were in three very different markets. We were in Las Vegas, St. Louis, Missouri, and Rockland, California, which is a suburb outside of Sacramento. So three very different markets, which was also helpful, by the way, because it showed us that, okay, this can work in different markets. This doesn't just have to be in a Las Vegas or a St. Louis, but we've got three states here, three different markets. It's working.
Right, exactly. Rather than like just, oh, I'm going to put three in Las Vegas and move them in different neighborhoods. Entering a different market is
a different world.
I mean, those seem like pretty random markets at this point. St. Louis, Rockland, totally, and Las Vegas.
Totally random. And really each one kind of had which reason. Las Vegas, because my dad purchased this patent that became part of the design of these trampoline courts from an individual who lived in Vegas. And so out of respect to him, we wanted to open the first one in Vegas. St. Louis, because I happened to be in college in St. Louis. So that's what was the genesis for that location. And then Rockland, because we had a unique opportunity to acquire some real estate that happened to be next door to an indoor basketball facility. So we said, oh, okay, well, that seems like if there's an indoor basketball facility, an indoor trampoline park should be next to it. We can buy the real estate. And it's not too far from Los Angeles, which is where my family lived at the time. So, all right, let's go bounce back to the West Coast. So, I mean, each one had its own reasons. In hindsight, it made no sense at all. if you're gonna open a retail business and you're trying to scale it, cluster it a little bit better, it's easier to manage. But it worked out.
Right. You're in a big country and those are pretty far apart from each other at this point.
Yep.
You're 23 or 24 at this point. And you're self-proclaimed, you were someone who didn't plan that far into the future. How did you start to like transform sort of yourself as a person to be the CEO that could forward think to growth? To, I mean, you're at, I think, over 200 locations at this point. So from three to 200, that's fast. And that's a lot of growth.
Yeah. look, I think there's nothing like on the job training. So I do a lot of reading. I find people out there. I do a lot of reading, and I also watch a lot of YouTube videos. I'm a big Steve Jobs fan, and I like to watch a lot of his speeches and read about him and his commencement speeches at Stanford and Vail's new products. I get a lot out of that and watch how leaders communicate and how they inspire people. But really the number one thing is surrounding yourself with people that have been there before and have done it, and soaking up, back to that listening thing, soaking up as much as you possibly can from them. And I was fortunate to be surrounded by some people like my father, who had started his own business in the past and was an entrepreneur for a while, or family friends that had done it before, and used them heavily as a resource to figure out how do I do this? And it was painful. I mean, I'm still learning, obviously, but it was challenging with how fast we were growing, and you're learning how to be a quote unquote CEO at the same time. And at first, which I've evolved quite a bit, but at first I kind of felt like, okay, I'm the CEO, I'm in charge. I got to know everything, and I got to keep tight controls on everything and be involved in everything. And I soon realized that that was like the complete wrong way to do it. So it's a lot of learning on the job, and being surrounded by people who I could lean on for help and advice.
So throughout all of this, you probably, as you've realized that you need to lean on other people for advice, it's because you don't know things, but also as your company grows, you also couldn't do everything. You could no longer have a hold on all of it. I mean, even at three locations that far apart, what was something throughout this process, or I mean, even up till now, if you want, but like, what's something, Jeff, that within the business that you yourself are just not good at?
Oh, finance is something I would say that I'm terrible at. I don't love looking at spreadsheets. Budgets, I realize, are something you're supposed to have and you need them, but I've never been a finance person. It's just not for me. And sometimes that's scary when you talk to investors or your board and you don't love the numbers, but it's just not me. I don't like staring at P&Ls and stuff. And as an entrepreneur, I think you tend to be much more instinctual and you kind of just go for it. I've learned to be more data-driven in decision-making, but I also know that you can get caught up in the data. And sometimes it leads you to not ever making a decision, which I think is worse. So numbers are just, for me, sometimes can be debilitating.
Yeah, so that's interesting. This indecision being worse than seeing making a decision that might not be the right one at the time. How, like, is this something that came instinctually to you, Jeff?
Yeah, when you're operating a small business and you do have an entrepreneur spirit, you just want to go. You don't want to slow down. You want to make decisions. You want to make them fast. You're comfortable screwing things up. You course correct, but you just want to go. And you know, the bigger you get, obviously, the more pressure there is, and the bigger the impact your decisions have on more people. So you do need to slow down at times and justify why you're making the decision you are. But I've seen and have been guilty at times of slowing down too much and looking for too much data to try and make a decision when it just doesn't exist. And so you gotta take what you have and commit to making some decision. And you know, again, use the data you have available, but don't let the data drive everything. I think gut is important. And obviously the bigger the decision, the less gut you want to use, but I think it always plays a role.
Another, I guess, characteristic that I see us as like small business owners, we do want to just push and push and go. But sometimes at the fault of what you talked about earlier, which was how you needed these processes in place. Mm-hmm. So as somebody who doesn't like to stare at spreadsheets and data, not that processes are necessarily data, but they do take time to sit down and sort of document. Was this something that you did yourself at the beginning, or was it like something that you just knew had to be done, but it had to be done by someone else?
Something I knew had to be done and by somebody else. And you know, I think it's important that we don't let process drive decision making. And sometimes you can get bogged down in the process. And you know, I try to avoid that at all costs. I frankly hate the word process, but I realize it's needed and has a place. But one of the things, as an example, that we very early on knew we needed was an operations manual, a big thick binder that tells you how to do everything you need to do inside the park, from how you open the doors and cash in the tills to cleaning to customer service to maintenance, everything. I wasn't going to create this binder. And By the way, nor was I probably ever going to look at it, but I knew we needed it because other people needed to use it as a resource. And so something we knew we needed, it was something that I wasn't going to be very helpful in pulling together. So tasked someone with our team to get one together, hired a third party company. And 3 months later, we had an operations manual, which I don't know if I've looked at to this date.
So you could just hire a company to create your operations manual.
Yeah, there's especially in the franchise world, there's a lot of companies that sort of come in and give you these, call it a tool. But 30% of it is standard, depending, no matter what business you're in. 70% of it's specific to your business. So, you know, they know to come in and ask you all the right questions to fill in the blanks. And because they have a process for how to make this document and process works. And I'm happy we did it. Just wasn't a project for me.
And then from 3 till your first franchise, what kind of timeline are we looking at?
It was about 2 years. So our very first franchise opened up right outside of Columbus, Ohio, shortly after that, Boston, Massachusetts. And that was in 2010. And so it was about 2 years.
So now you have from the East Coast all the way to the West Coast and several places in between.
we wanted to make life as difficult as possible on our team from a traveling perspective.
At this point, when you were doing this, like, I'm trying to see like what, at some point, obviously you became somebody who did look into the future. And I don't know if you foresaw 200 locations or what those goals were. Like, is this something that you did, even if you didn't sit down and write it down, because it seems like maybe that's not your style, but did you start having these ideas? Like, you're at the head of this and you're starting to see growth that's probably exponential at times. And you're just like, are you like, we can do 100 of these, we can do 1,000 of these. Was this something you would just set your goal and then just keep pushing forward to it?
So the real answer is no, I didn't myself. Everyone says, oh, you must've had this vision. There was no vision. There was just go, go, go every day, figure out how to get through the day, make sure you could make payroll and that, you know, the place didn't burn down. So that was every day and it was grinding and
it's so glamorous, Jeff.
Yeah. You know, starting a business, that's what it is. All those entrepreneurs can relate. But it wasn't really until about 2009-ish that, it might've been 2008 actually, that an individual approached us about wanting to invest in the business and invest real money, 7 figures. And this guy had a lot of experience growing brands and he was a very successful guy. And that was the first time that I said, wow, if we're attracting somebody like this, he is doing this because he believes there's scalability here. And I remember he sort of equated us, although a very different business, but to Build-A-Bear, which I'm not familiar with Build-A-Bear, but a teddy bear concept that is in malls where you go, you create your teddy bear. They have hundreds of locations and all over the world. And he was more equating us like if from the standpoint of entertainment, multi-unit, franchise-based, scale, growth, we could do the same thing. And that was the first time that I said, wow, someone else believes in this. Because as an entrepreneur, you want validation. Of course, you believe what you're selling, but do others. And so to see him be passionate about the fact and confident that this could happen was the first time I said, wow, we really can scale. The next thing I did was one of those mentors that I had, I approached and we started talking about, I'll never forget this. We started talking about how do we even think about what scale is? And so we just picked another business model that we felt was similar. And we said, well, bowling. And we put a spreadsheet together and we said, how many bowling alleys are there in the US? And we started looking at how many bowling alleys are a couple thousand and what's different about their business than our business. And do we think for every one bowling alley, there can be one sky zone? No, we think for every one, there can maybe be for every 10 bowling alleys, maybe one. So we started mapping. If we did this much revenue and the market potential is this, and this is what the business could look like. And that was really the first time that inspired by others that I sat and said, business could scale. And then my phone would ring and we'd have a maintenance issue in the park or an employee issue somewhere. And I'd get completely distracted and back to the daily grind of running the business and not thinking so much about what could this be in the future. But that was really how, for the first time, 5 years after the business started, that we said, there could be a lot of scale here.
So did that investor invest?
No, but more
planted the seed.
more our doing than his. And yeah, and as far as I'm concerned, that was such an incredibly valuable learning experience for me. And as you said, planted the seed is exactly right. spent a couple months with this individual, and as we were talking through his involvement, and ultimately it didn't work out. And I don't know if that's for the better or the worse, who knows, but at the end of the day, I learned a lot from this person and I'm grateful for that. Definitely helped.
So 2009, the seed gets planted. 2018, you were acquired by another company completely.
Yep.
Between those two points, like, did you, at that point, did you just think, let's just, like, we can, there's bowling alleys, if we can do one out of every 10 bowling alleys, even though I think bowling alleys probably at that point were already starting to disappear, because that's a weird industry that just, bowling's amazing, but I don't know why nobody goes bowling anymore. But they like to jump on trampolines. But like, where was this sort of, I guess I'm wondering where you have this seed and you're trying to take the time between putting out fires to start scaling the company globally at this, it went to, and then you're like some point, I'm assuming you were like, this company could actually just get acquired by somebody else and you could step back if you wanted.
Yeah, it was in that time period from 2010 to 2018, there was just a lot of growth happening. And it was with every new location we opened and with every new successful park, it just gave us one more point of validation that this is working, and it's working everywhere. And we opened our first location, actually our first international location was in Mississauga. So not terribly far from where you are. And I think that was 2013. So we started to see that the scale is, it's got big potential. And if you asked any of our investors, our original investors, I'm talking dating back to 2004, they'll all tell you that the one condition for which they invested in the business was that we didn't tell anybody that they invested in the business, because they were actually embarrassed. They were like, I'm giving you this money because I believe in your father, but this is never going to work. So this is going to be a tax write-off for me. And I don't want anyone to know that I'm crazy enough to have invested in this trampoline concept. And fast forward to the middle of, call it 2014, 2015, as we're growing and growing and growing, and they're all looking and saying, this actually is working and a great business. And like any investor, naturally one day they say, look, at some point we'd love to exit the business. And they weren't very hands-on. You know, some served on our board. And I had a lot of desire to continue to grow and scale the business. And so they said to me, if you want to find a new partner to continue to grow and scale with, and they want to acquire our portion of the business, we support that. And so that's sort of what transpired over those 8 years, which led up to an acquisition by another company.
Wow. I love it. So don't tell people that I invested in this. This is going to be just a tax write-off too. Whoa, this really works. Can you go back now and tell everybody that I invested in this originally?
Right. Tell them how smart I am. Tell them I'm a genius.
I totally foresaw this happening.
Yep. That's funny. And they'll still say that to this day. They're obviously thrilled the way it turned out. But I mean, that's literally how they felt at the beginning. This is crazy. This is a crazy idea. My dad's a great salesman and had some friends that really believed in him. And so he was able to convince them to invest. And they were fairly wealthy. And so they just looked at it and said, okay, well, if I got to write it off, I'll write it off. It's okay.
It is one of those ideas. I know the first time I saw one, it was like, it made perfect sense, but it was also like completely different than anything I'd seen. But it was like,
wow. And that's how most people felt about it. When they, you know, it's like most amazing businesses, you don't think of it, but when you see it or hear it, you're like, oh, I get it. Why didn't I think of that? And, you know, and this business is not too different. It's we took trampolines, which is a fun thing to do, and we linked them together. Simple. And I mean, we've obviously expanded and sort of really grown into other things now, but at the end of the day, that's what the business was to start. And when you're talking about it, I used to not like to tell people what I did because they're like, an indoor trampoline park, what is that? And it was hard to explain to people. But when they had visited one, or when they see it, or they saw a picture or a YouTube video, they immediately got it. Immediately. It's very visual. Which by the way, a lot of people say, God, why do you think you grew so much? I think one of those reasons was social media. We are made for social media. You take a video of yourself flipping or going through a warrior course, and you post that online, you look cool. And it's just the bottom line. And that fueled a lot of growth for us.
Which is funny because in 2006, I don't even know what was social media at that point.
If Facebook was like getting off the ground. Right. So, I mean, we grew up with social media sort of, I mean, our business grew up with social media sort of really gaining popularity.
So as the CEO, the president, the person at the lead of this, how did your thinking change about the business when, and I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but at some point you stopped thinking of the person who walked in and spent $8 or whatever to jump on a trampoline, from that being your customer to franchisees being your customer, and you had to acquire them, and then they had to acquire the actual individual consumer.
Yeah, it's very different owning and operating locations and then being a franchisor. Those are two very different businesses. We use a phrase internally here with the team, which is, we serve those that serve our guest, those being our franchise owners, because they're the ones on the front line. We've got to serve them and make their lives easier, provide them support, tools, resources to take as much thinking out of the business for them as possible so that they can focus on the day-to-day of running their parks, which is very different from being an owned and operated company that just owns and operates. So they're really two distinct business models. And we view ourselves as support. We are support for our franchise owners. Our job is to give them tools and resources and also to think about what's next for the business. And we should be trying and failing on their behalf so that they don't have to do it. Does that make sense?
Meaning you owned, like you had corporate owned locations and franchised?
Correct. So for some of our owned locations that we have, our job was to test things and try things and make mistakes and find wins too, by the way. But for example, if we're going to try a new attraction, does this attraction work? Does the ROI make sense? Do people like it? And if not, pull it out, try something new. And if it does, great, then scale it and roll it out to our locations, or new marketing tactics or operational procedures or point of sale systems, whatever it could be. Our job is to try things on their behalf and fail and succeed.
And then confidently bring it to the market at scale.
Correct. Exactly.
How many locations did you own corporately when you stopped? Or like, I'm assuming you stopped at some point opening corporate locations.
We had about a half a dozen before we were acquired. Now, when we were acquired, we actually were merged with what was a competitor to us previously, which is now a friendly cousin, we call it. But now the company has over 100 owned and operated locations, a couple different brands, by the way. Some of those are Sky Zones, and we have a few other brands, and we have about 220 franchises. So we are two equal parts, almost franchise 2-to-1, franchise to owned and operated, and two entirely separate divisions of the company now, owned and operated division and a franchise division.
Wow. To me, it seems staggering from where you're at today. And then talking back to like 2006, where you're just like, I don't know, let's just do this. Let's just get the next store open.
So. Yeah, back to that vision. There was no vision and certainly didn't anticipate that this would happen. I think we got really, really super lucky with sort of some macro things that were going on at the world around the experience economy and the need to be more active and social media we talked about. And I think we got lucky in that our concept, our business, it's just fun. It's cool. It's different. It's unique. And it's good for you. It's a workout. And it's, you sweat and you move and you're active and you're playing. And we just hit at the right time and then got even luckier when we happened to get a great set of franchise owners who were equally passionate about the business that helped us grow and scale and feel very fortunate and candidly had no idea this would happen.
Yeah. And I mean, you got lucky, but you also put yourself in the way to be lucky. All the rest of us also went through those same years and eras of social media. And we didn't get lucky because we didn't put ourselves in the place of it.
You got to work hard. You do.
Exactly.
You got to work hard. You got to grind it out. And you got to be passionate. I think if you work hard, you're passionate, you got a little bit of luck, then good things can happen.
I've absolutely loved this conversation, Jeff. I would love to wrap up if we could on one final question though.
Sure.
So I've interviewed almost 500 people at this time, Jeff, and I've come up with this idea of this entrepreneurial gap. It seems to be this place we live in as entrepreneurs, as dreamers, that we're always projecting our personal and our business successes into the future. So no matter what metric we're at, we're always going to be happy when we get to that next place we set. Whatever that metric might be, you and I both know that right before you hit that, you're just going to set bigger, loftier goals into the future. And there's just this place we always live in. I agree we need to sort of push forward, and you've obviously done it incredibly. But I would like it now, rather than looking forward, if you could stop and turn around and look behind you, Jeff. We've talked about your business and the sort of experience, but I'm sure we haven't touched on nearly all the highs, lows, wins, and losses. But if you could you just tell me, how do you feel about this entire journey up until this moment?
It's so funny how you started all that, because I totally agree with the notion that it's never enough. And you set a goal, you achieve it, and you're on to the next. And you fail to even celebrate what it is that you achieved, even though you've set out to achieve that. You're constantly pushing for more, which, by the way, is stressful and hard. And I am very much that way. Fortunately, my wife always pushes me and says, celebrate wins. It's good and healthy for your mind to do that. So I've tried to do that a little bit more, but I got a lot of work to do in that area. To answer your question directly, one word, frankly, comes to mind, and it's grateful. I feel incredibly grateful that I was put in the position I was, that I was surrounded by people that supported me and had a real, not even a financial interest, but really wanted just to see me grow personally and professionally, and invested in me to help coach and mentor and educate me to grow this business and grow as a person, an individual, a leader. And I feel incredibly grateful. I should celebrate the wins more, and the fact that we're able to grow this business and scale it, and then kind of complete that entrepreneurial cycle of selling the business, which is every entrepreneur's dream. But from where we started, it's never enough. And I don't feel like I've achieved enough. And I feel like there's so much more to achieve. But I'm always going to be that way. I at least recognize it, but I'm always going to be that way. But I definitely feel grateful. And I think it's important to practice gratitude and recognize it. And not only for those people that helped me, but the team and franchise owners and our new investors that invested in me. And I feel grateful.
I love it. I love it, Jeff. So we've talked about it all throughout. Could you now tell two separate people where to go find out more? I guess people who would like to maybe just go jump around on a trampoline, and then people who might be interested in looking into the franchise side of this.
Yeah. So our website is the best source of information, skyzone.com. There's lots of franchise information on there. There's lots of location information there. You can find everything there is about our brand on our website. Some quick Google searching, and there's a lot out there.
Skyzone.com. We'll link to that. There's some Wikipedia. Spike TV, I looked up, and I don't think that it exists anymore.
That's surprising. I hadn't heard about it in 10 years.
Neither had I. And as Jeff said earlier in the conversation, Skyzone is very active on social media. There's Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, all those things. I'll link to some of those in the show notes. I believe, Jeff, you said you are sometimes on the Twitter. That'd be twitter.com/Skyzone.
Yep. We've got that. That's our corporate account. Obviously, Platt Jeff is my personal. We're all over social media. It's a big part of our business.
Excellent. I'll find both of those, the Twitter, the personal, and the corporate, and I'll link to those as well on the show notes. So they're there for you whenever you're done walking, jogging, working out, or jumping on your trampoline, whatever it is you're doing at this very moment.
Staying active.
Exactly. Jeff, once again, thank you so much for joining me. Thanks for sharing so openly. I truly, truly appreciate it. And just keep doing what you're doing, man, because it is very awesome and inspiring to watch.
Appreciate it, John. Watch out for those Maple Leafs.
Thanks. Jeff, thank you so much for joining me. I really, truly appreciate that. And you too, out there listening, I absolutely appreciate you stopping by. Now's the time for you to head on over to the website, hacktheentrepreneur.com, and there's something for you there. You can get onto the email list if you would like. You can get my book for free if you would like. And you can just read articles, or you can hire us if you want. If you just need more traffic to your business and you want me to do some SEO work for you, by all means, it's all there and it's all for you. hacktheentrepreneur.com. Head over there now. And while you do that, I'm just going to say farewell for the week. And once again, thank you for stopping by. You can reach out to me on Twitter. You can track me down on LinkedIn. You can track me down via email if you wish. That you can get on the website. But yeah, it's been a blast. I absolutely appreciate it. And please, until next time, keep hacking the entrepreneur.